Hello everyone, welcome back. We meet now to discuss the last chapter of our course, which is how do you or what are the things to look for before you start your next project. So yeah, we've reached the end of the course now. So just to recap what we actually studied, we started by looking at what is estimation, why is it required for any IT project. We then had a look at the different project attributes and their impacts on the overall delivery of the project. So things like cost, things like scope, time, resources, risk, etc., etc. So we had a detailed look at all those project attributes. We then spent a good amount of time understanding the impact of these project attributes on the overall delivery of the project. The overall success parameters. We then shifted our focus from the project attributes to a logical beginning of the project. So we started by looking at the project execution techniques, and we said what is important in a big bang approach versus a phased approach. Where is one suited more depending upon the business requirement, depending upon the nature of the project, the nature of the business, the segment, the mindset of the customer, the skill set of the people on board, etc., etc. We then had a look at the project management methodologies, and more importantly, we actually spent a good amount of time understanding where each of them can be adapted as per the situation. So we started by discussing the waterfall model and then went on to discuss the Agile framework and different models within the Agile framework. So things like Scrum, things like Kanban, Scrumban, and then we spent time in understanding some of the other techniques also. So things like extreme programming, RAD, that is application development, rapid application development, sorry. We looked at where is agile methodology more suited as compared to waterfall model. We then spent time looking at the work breakdown structure and the different types of WBS, and spent a good amount of time understanding the different levels of WBS, right? So why is it important? How do you break? How do you divide a large amount of work into smaller deliverable parts? So that's the essence of a work breakdown structure, massively used as far as the industry is concerned. I haven't come across any project that doesn't use a work breakdown structure. So absolutely powerful tool. And then we spent some time looking at the actual estimation techniques. We started by discussing the top-down approach, the bottom-up approach, advantages, disadvantages of each. The three-point estimation technique, which is my personal favorite, and spend time in understanding the different estimation techniques. So planning, game theory, etc., etc. And then we shifted our focus in understanding the nuances of the project planning, right? How the different cost elements, skill elements, etc. impact the overall delivery of the project. Also we looked at, say, things like the human bias, how it could impact the project. So now let us look at what are the things to keep in mind before you start the next project. So we will look at the IT project successes and the failure rates. And more importantly, try and understand why do we have these successes and failures. So just a key takeaway would be to have an understanding of the different parameters and then ensure that whenever there is a project that gets implemented, ensure that these parameters are well noted so that you don't face the pitfalls. And then we move on to look at the project estimation best practices. And the subtopics would be to simplify, that is a remedy for complexity. I mean, any complex situation, you just try to simplify so that it can be simple enough to understand for the customer, for the internal stakeholders, so that it can be delivered in the right manner. Avoid unnecessary guesstimates. Now, I know the topic that we're discussing is estimation, and I'm kind of contradicting myself by saying don't guesstimate. So the idea here is, as long as your estimate is backed by figures, facts, experiences, so be honest, be truthful, and then look at the figures. Clearly spell out the assumptions that you make in the overall methodology. And as I've been saying, it's important to document. Make sure you state the assumptions, because basis the assumptions, you would have created some kind of estimates. So it's important to clearly spell out these assumptions. And more importantly, have a discussion with the end stakeholders with regards to the assumptions. Look at how do you adapt to the available budget. More importantly, look at the contingency plan, look at the risks, ensure that you capture the risks. You don't over buffer stuff, but ensure that the contingency is also looked at, and some amount of buffer is planned for that. Look at some of the overlooked activities, so and we'll spend good amount of time understanding these, but certain activities which just go under the carpet, it's important to look at those as well. As I've been saying, break down the overall project into smaller deliverable parts. List and evaluate each every task. So this again is a reiteration of our work breakdown structure. Bring in the past experience, bring in the people, the experience that they've had in the past projects, and more importantly, develop that learning from the past projects. Understand the overall context and the background. So as I've said, it's important to analyze the landscape that you are working in. What is the kind of industry segment, the industry segment trends, the cyclical patterns, the seasonal patterns, the change in the demand patterns or supply patterns, etc., etc. So it's important to understand the business dynamics. It could be a key a parameter for the overall success of the project. Last is to ask relevant questions. So as I've been saying, whenever you start a project, ask as many questions as possible. Try and move from the region of unknowns to the region of knowns by asking as many questions about the project as possible, about business requirements, about stakeholder expectations, etc., etc. So these things are absolutely essential so that there is ample amount of clarity on both sides, on the customer side as well as on the project vendor side. We also look at some of the actions to improve the existing estimation. You would have had a baseline estimate, so what actions are needed to kind of improve those estimation techniques, how can those actions be translated into your next project. Get a better understanding of the overall project, take time, develop the learning curve to sharpen the skills, and ensure that the learning curve gets profiled into the behavior so that the next projects that get delivered, they have the right amount of skills, techniques, experience, more importantly, to deliver the right results. So yes, a power-packed agenda, let's deep dive into it. So now that we all kind of know the unreliable estimates, whether it is for cost or any kind of scope creep that happens, or timelines, maybe some increased amount of timelines, they are say some of the biggest reasons why projects don't meet their expectations, right? So I believe the biggest factor over here would be the scope creep. You would agree on one particular scope at the start of the project or the project estimation, and as and when the scope keeps changing, this leads to spiraling cost and change in the timelines. So it can be a most important factor that impacts a overall success of a project. So it is a must that all the estimates in a project management be as accurate as possible. And obviously the key to success is to understand the project, understand the nuances, and then break it down into smaller deliverable parts. All of this means that there are no ready answers. So there is no one size that fits all. There is no single source of truth. So simplifying the complex situation or the problem is the best bet for success in case of a changing dynamics. So yes, simplification is the key. Asking as many relevant questions as possible is the key. And more importantly, having a clear understanding of the smaller tasks is what would make a project successful. And as I've been saying, there is no quick fix that will immediately make the planners instant heroes, right? Or better estimators overnight. It's a journey which the estimators have to undergo. They learn after, say, multiple projects, some learnings out of a new project, which is say a new technology, and then they carry the learnings into the next project and so on. The real experience, as I said, gained over several projects, and the lesson learned from our own and others' mistake make us better at the art of estimation, right? So in one of the previous sessions, we discussed whether estimation is an art or a science, and we kind of deliberated that it's actually in between art and science. So more importantly, from a people's perspective, how do you incorporate the past experiences, be it a new project or be it a path-breaking technology, say something like using a predictive or a generative AI technique, something like say a ChatGPT into say the overall project dimension. So some of these things are pretty new to the market, and say gaining experience out of it, developing the estimates around it can be a little tricky. So that's where experience really matters. When you are treading unknown waters, then it's good to have some kind of buffer, but more importantly, have experience from some of the domain consultants, the industry experts, so they could be the guiding force for you to estimate. So looking at say the success and the failure rates, the internet allows businesses to reach global customers. This creates huge requirements for the IT projects to be undertaken by the organizations, including say implementation, upgrades, etc. All of this means that at any given point in time, multiple IT projects are running in the organization. And with so much project experience, we may feel that the overall success of IT projects should be far higher. Because I mean, understandably, right? Multiple different projects running simultaneously, people getting a lot of exposure to say newer techniques, now with project estimation techniques, project management methodologies, everything in place, you would expect a higher success rate for the project. But unfortunately, as per the industry, almost 50% of the projects are termed as failed IT projects, and there are reasons behind it. So many a times, as I said, if it's a expectation mismatch, right? Say the company expected a particular business outcome, but the project was never able to deliver that. So that's the biggest factor that impacts the overall success of the project. So at the end of the day, what do the business owners really want? They want that the project or the capital that they've spent on creating a new project, that should give them the business results. But if at the end of the day, the particular project doesn't deliver the business results, then it falls really flat. So that, according to me, is termed as a failed IT project. And as I said, because there are multiple different projects going on simultaneously, people getting involved, newer technology, so there's constantly changing business dynamics all around. You might see a lot of attrition, you might see some new technologies getting implemented, you might see, say, certain new vendors who are not familiar with the ecosystem. So it could be a whole host of different parameters. And as we discussed, the reasons for failures could be different. Mostly include running behind the planned schedule, exceeding the timelines, going over budget, most importantly, as I said, not meeting the customer requirements, the end expectations from the business stakeholders. If those expectations are not met, then the time, the cost, etc. wouldn't really matter, because the more important facet to a successful project is the key tangibles that the project would deliver, right? So say if you're planning a HRMS system, then the system should act as what was envisaged. It should deliver the output. So say if you're creating a employee onboarding application, so things like where do you find training material, where do you find contacts of key people, admin resources, skill resources, etc. So if that particular business objectives are not really met by the project, no matter how fast that project gets delivered or in whatever lower cost that the project gets delivered, it doesn't really meet the business objectives. And that's the biggest success or the failure parameter, according to me. Many projects that meet this criteria are unable to quantify the value that is delivered and hence cannot generate a ROI. Now, this from a business sponsor's perspective, so someone who actually endorses the project as a success or failure, the person would look at this particular project in terms of ROI. So ROI in terms of the kind of investment that is put in the project and the kind of returns that the project is going to deliver. So say if for a manufacturing company, you are planning a inventory management system. So obviously taking that particular software, customizing it, ensuring that it works as per the requirements of the organization, etc., takes a lot of cost, right? So there is obviously a lot of capex that gets spent on that. But apart from the capex, there are also a lot of people who get involved. So you are involving, say, a lot of people from different departments, be it functional, be it technical, sometimes business users, etc. So ensuring that the people's time, the overall cost expenditure, and more importantly, the time that is spent by everyone is reciprocated by the actual benefits that the software would give. So say if it's an inventory management system and it is expected to act in a certain way. So how, say, soft alerts are given when the inventory reaches certain threshold levels, etc., is something that is expected out of the software. And how would that translate in terms of the overall business benefits? So ROI justification is absolutely required in terms of calling the success, calling the a project a success or a failure. And that's the biggest takeaway from a business sponsor. So as I said, more importantly, when the ROI justification, the project is able to deliver the ROI that was promised at the start of the project, all the stakeholders are happy in that case. So analysis of such projects indicates that the IT projects are very, very different, unique, and challenging in its own nature. All the IT projects, as we discussed, are complex and challenging. So all the companies that are involved in designing, manufacturing, say assembling, selling services, or even upgrading the equipment listed above use IT for the day-to-day jobs. So as I said, be it from the manufacturing industry, say, or working on assembly lines, shop floors, or be it a normal IT/ITES company delivering services, be it an e-commerce player. So everyone uses IT as part of their day-to-day operation. So it's absolutely indispensable. And these companies use multiple different systems. And these are internal systems, so things like accounting systems. Now, the way accounting system gets delivered for, say, a banking organization, say a bank, or say even a non-banking but a financial company. So typically the NBFC is the loan organizations, etc., is different from the way the accounting function works for, say, a manufacturing company. A manufacturing organization would have a lot of focus on warehouse management system, inventory management systems, and so on. Whereas organizations who are heavily focused in the services industry, they will have a lot of their key assets spent on customer management system. So, say, be it a telecom company where the customer is absolutely the asset that the company has. So details of the customer are included in a CRM, that is a customer relationship management tool. So the customer engagement systems are something that are really key for such organizations. Say again for companies into manufacturing, power, etc. So supply chain planning, distribution, logistics, etc. are more important systems for them. You would have certain other systems like the human resources, or the popularly known as the HRMS, that is the human resource management systems. These kind of span horizontally across different industries. So accounting practices, human resource systems, payroll systems, leave management systems, etc., etc. So these are some of the systems that are spread across different organizations. Whereas some key systems are more related to that particular sector, as we discussed. So things like, say, material management or procurement or supply chain management, etc., etc. So it is in these areas that failure rates for the IT projects would be higher, and understandably so, because these are specialized systems required for the particular segment. And the success rate of these systems are something that impacts the overall business. So say, if you're talking about a paints manufacturing company, someone like Asian Paints or a Berger Paint or Nerolac or anyone, right? The main key success of that particular project is that the paint should be available to the end user while, and this is a ever-changing demand, correct? The companies know what kind of colors or shades are generally taken by the consumers. So depending upon the consumer patterns, they would devise an inventory system such that if there is an inventory that is going to get replenished, it gets shipped within 4 hours. So that's the power of a supply chain or a logistics system in a paints company. And because the overall success of the business depends upon these are delivered as very robust systems. So whenever there is a change management or an enhancement, the failure rates of the projects would be much higher, much impactful in these particular areas. And one of the major reasons why, say, a project would fail is that if there are too many complexities involved. See, having a complexity in a project is okay, as long as you have clarity about the business problem that it is solving. If that particular outcome is it achievable? Is it smart? So is it smart, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time bound? If it's too complex, you don't have proper logic to it, then it's bound for failures. So with increased dependency on technology, business functions are unable to run in the absence of IT systems and solutions. So as we discussed in the case of the paints manufacturer, an accurate inventory management system is core to the business. Similarly, if you look at say a power distribution company, correct? So yeah, the power distribution company, as the name suggests, it's in the business of distributing power. But more importantly, it actually procures power from somewhere and then distributes, correct? So unless it predicts the seasonality, the user behavior correctly, so either it could procure too much power from the power generating companies, and if it's not able to deliver, or if it is, if there is a lot of power wastage that happens, which means it's a business loss. On the other side, if the demand from the user is very high, but they are not able to predict that particular demand, and they end up procuring less amount of power from these power companies, which means they are actually looking at an opportunity loss. You might see power failures, etc., but I'm not going there. I'm saying purely from a business perspective, it is actually a loss for them, correct? Because there was a high demand, but they were not able to fulfill because they were not able to predict the kind of demand patterns. So in case of the power distribution company, say a AI system or a machine learning system which accurately predicts the seasonality of demand, the user behavior, the usage patterns is something that is core to the business. And hence we say that these functions would be absolutely unable to run in absence of these powerful IT systems and processes. For the same reason, business teams do not allow the requisite downtimes, and considerably so. So if you say as an end user of banking product, you wouldn't want to go to an ATM and say that it's out of service. Obviously, you would want service to be up all the time. So the core banking system has to be up 24/7. Although the banking hours are limited, but still, if you say want to do a IMPS transaction, even at odd hours, you're still able to do that, and the system allows you to do that. So the systems are designed in such a way that it's absolutely heavily dependent on IT. The key business resources are not made available to spell out the requirements or test the systems, then it's not a good practice to go ahead, because at the end of the day, it's business that would get impacted. Within these constraints, the IT teams often try to accomplish too many things in too little time, and that's the recipe of a failure. So having focus on multiple different things, and if the organization has multiple different projects going on, then people are forced to do multiple things, correct? So either they are too ambitious, or say the innovative IT folks either take too much unwanted risks in order to be, say, top performers in their organizations. But if they're not able to effectively manage the business expectations, then it's a perfect recipe for failure. So it's like saying, trying to impress the management, there is an aspirational project that has been undertaken. But you don't have the right kind of skill set, nor the right kind of mindset, nor you've done a proper scoping of the business requirements. And because of that particular reason, the requirements keep changing when the project delivery has started. So it's an absolute recipe for failure, because the timelines are going to get stretched, the cost is going to get stretched, and more importantly, you don't have clarity in terms of what is the business benefits that you expect from the particular project. And hence, justifying ROI when the project gets delivered often becomes tough for the business owners. IT teams may be often overloaded with too many projects running in the organization. We discussed this point. And thereby, they get pulled into different projects at the same time. So say if there are certain key resources who are domain experts, functional consultants, they get pulled into multiple different projects that happen simultaneously. So this severely limits the ability of these IT experts to plan their time. Obviously, too many things simultaneously happening where you are expected to ensure success rate in all of them, it becomes sometimes a daunting task for people, right? And that's where it said that with many constraints, if IT teams are trying to spread themselves too thin or unnecessarily trying to factor in a lot of risk so as to show the management the success of the particular project, then it's causing a project to fail. There are sometimes compatibility issues between interdependent technology, and that's a classic case. So say if there is a hardware and a OS, so that particular version has to match, and on top of it there could be certain non-standard or proprietary technology from different vendors, so which adds fuel to the fire. So say if you are running, say, Oracle version 11c in your organization. Now, the Oracle as a company has declared 11c as end of support. So you have to upgrade that. On top of it, if there are multiple different subsystems, so say you have a claims fraud system that is using a Oracle database in the backend, or there is a risk engine, say a solution for running credit risk or market risk, which uses the same Oracle database, which means that changing the version of the Oracle database would affect all the subsystems. So that's the kind of dependency that I'm talking about. The interdependency between various business processes and functions means that the interfaces must be built between the systems for them to function seamlessly. So the best practice, according to me, is work on a microservices based architecture where these subsystems are kept differently, treated differently. So if there is one subsystem that fails, it doesn't have an impact on the other. But if you look at enterprise architecture, then these subsystems somewhere or the other get connected into a broader ecosystem, and that's where it becomes tricky and complex at the same time. Having multiple different vendors working on an ecosystem, everyone having, say, different versions, different requirements as far as, say, hardware, software stack is concerned, to ensure compliance in all of these might be sometimes a daunting task. And all of these add to the complexity of the changing or modifying nature of the processes, systems or solution. To add to the point, if there is obsolescence of technology or there is a new technology that has come up. So say, just to give you an example, earlier you used to have, say, a client server architecture where one particular application used to reside on one particular physical server. Now, and I'm talking this about, say, 2 decades ago, how business used to happen. Slowly things got evolved. There were techniques like virtualization that were introduced. So what these virtualization techniques did is, on the same physical hardware, you could have multiple different applications running. So it was like saying each application gets run onto one particular physical server, but then that physical server gets virtually divided into multiple logical servers. And the virtualization or companies like, say, VMware, etc., did a great job till this time. There were virtual machines created. Now, what happened is slowly the businesses kept evolving, and that's where the change happened from virtualization to containerization. Now, containerization is similar to virtualization, where you have the same physical hardware. But in case of containerization, the underlying OS is different. So that's so without getting into too much details, the whole thing is that technology keeps on evolving. And if there is one particular project that was, say, working on, say, a siloed or a client server kind of architecture, where the other subsystems have moved to a Kubernetes or a container based application approach, then as IT org or as IT owners, they have to ensure that parity remains. And if it is not, then it's a key parameter which might cause a overall failure. And that's where it is said that IT projects can be complex. Higher attrition rate is again a key parameter that causes projects to fail. A higher attrition rate of technology experts means that there are not enough skilled resources available to visualize and plan for these changes. Having those domain experts, having those skilled resources, having people who have worked on the system and then they can lend their service even during the project running phase is something that is important. If you have new skill sets working on a project that was developed by, say, some other people, they might take a lot of time to come up to speed to what is happening, right? And that's where attrition plays such a key role in the overall success of a project.